Podcast. I'm your host, Jim DeCesare. We're very excited to bring on a special guest this week, U.S. Senator Rand Paul. U.S. Senator Rand Paul, Dr. Rand Paul, is one of the nation's leading advocates for liberty. Elected to the United States Senate in 2010, Dr. Paul has proven to be an outspoken champion for constitutional liberties and fiscal responsibility. As a fierce advocate against government overreach, Dr. Paul has fought tirelessly to return government to its limited constitutional scope. As a hardworking and dedicated physician, not a career politician, Dr. Paul came to Washington to shake things up and to make a difference. Dr. Paul's entrance into politics is indicative of his life work as a surgeon, a desire to diagnose problems and provide practical solutions, whether it be in Bowling Green, Kentucky, or Washington, D.C. He's the author of several books, including The Case Against Socialism and his latest book, which we're here to talk about today, Deception, The Great COVID Cover-Up. You can find this book at www.randpaulbook.com and at all major booksellers. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Senator Rand Paul. Senator Paul, thanks for being on the DeCesare Group podcast. How are you?
Well, I'm glad to be with you. I wish I could be in person in Bowling Green, but I'm still stuck in D.C.
Well, you got to do the people's business. We understand that. And you got to make sure that our liberties are protected in Washington, D.C. We understand that, but we appreciate you being on. And we wanted to talk about the book because it's a phenomenal book. I read it page to page, every word of it. And what made you decide to write this book?
You know, when COVID first came out, I was like everybody else, worried about the disease, worried about travel, worried about people getting sick, you know, worried about people dying, and remained worried about that. But as time went on, I kept seeing some of these freedom of information requests come forward. And all of a sudden, we found out that everything they were saying to us in public, they were saying the opposite in private. So a series of emails between Anthony Fauci and some of the world's leading virologists come out, and these virologists had been saying, if you think that this came from a lab, you're part of a conspiracy theory and you're crazy and you shouldn't be listened to. And Facebook downgraded anybody who talked about it. People were being censored who believed that the information led to that this came from the Wuhan lab. And yet when the emails came out, we see Anthony Fauci talking to Christian Anderson and Bob Gary and Ernie Holmes and all these people, and they're all privately saying, well, yeah, it looks manipulated. And one of my favorites is Christian Anderson sends an email for four virologists to Anthony Fauci, and he says, the virus is inconsistent with natural evolution. It's inconsistent with coming from nature. The structure of it looks like it's been manipulated. A week later, maybe 4 days later, Christian Anderson sends another email and he says, when I'm trying to convince the public that this came from natural causes, I like to use the words that it's consistent with evolutionary theory. And it's like he's gone from inconsistent to consistent in 1 week's time. How does that happen? And then one of the things we discovered in the book is that these people are getting large multi-million dollar grants about the same time. So Christian Anderson first thinks that it's been manipulated in a lab. He's virtually certain. He's very worried about it. He's worried that it came from a Chinese lab. 4 days later, after discussing with Anthony Fauci, Anthony Fauci convinced him to write a paper called Proximal Origins that got published everywhere, where he says it is absolutely not a laboratory construct. A month later, Christian Anderson gets a $9 million grant from Anthony Fauci. This stuff stinks to high heaven.
Yeah, coincidence?
Yeah. You decide.
Yeah. So the one thing that stuck out to me with the book is how well researched it was. I mean, you have almost 100 pages of references. How's the reception been from readers across the country?
You know, I think really good. And we try to get people hooked in the humanity of this story and sort of the deceit and the cover up from the very beginning. And, you know, the book starts out talking about a young ophthalmologist, Li Wenliang. And I was an ophthalmologist, and I say sort of tongue in cheek, I say, you know, once upon a time, I was a young ophthalmologist when I came to Bowling Green 30 something years ago. But, you know, all he does is try to inform his friends. He sees it'd be like working at one of the hospitals in Bowling Green and saying, gosh, I'm seeing these viruses of unknown origin. I'm thinking these pneumonias of unknown origin. And boy, it looks a lot like the viruses from 2003, you know, when we had a SARS epidemic. And just for doing that, he was arrested. The Chinese communist authorities arrest him. And they do something almost like what they used to do during Mao's time. It's about shaming you publicly. You get arrested and take down. They don't just shoot you. They don't put you in jail forever, but they shame you. And he was accused of disrupting the public and spreading gossip and spreading misinformation. But then he had to sign a confession that he was in the wrong and he offended the state and he was forever ashamed of his behavior. And it's just sort of like a public flogging of old. And then he dies. Like a couple weeks later, he dies from COVID. And in the book, I don't know why he died. I mean, he died from COVID ostensibly, but this is China, where when you die in a totalitarian country, questions will arise. He was only 33. Yeah. The chance of a 33-year-old dying from COVID in our country is about 1 in 100,000. Yeah. Very, very rare for a young person to die from COVID, and particularly if they didn't have a health issue in advance.
And back to the research part of the book, you talk a lot about the committee hearings and things that were going on in Washington, D.C. at the same time. But how did all this research come together? I mean, I'm sure you had to dig everywhere to get this information. And a lot of these organizations, government organizations, I'm using air quotes here, I'm sure they weren't cooperating with you.
Absolutely no cooperation, zero. In fact, almost everything we know about the cover-up and almost everything we know about the origins came from independent research from Freedom of Information Act. The Freedom of Information Act allows us to get the communications of people in the executive branch. Without this, we wouldn't have known anything. And after a while, they got wise to us. So one of Fauci's assistants, David Morenz, at one point says, "Don't send any more email to my government email. Send it to my Gmail. They FOIA everything on there. If you don't want to see it in the New York Times, don't send it to my government email." But that's actually illegal to do that. If you work in the federal government, in the executive branch, you have to. We had this controversy, remember, with Hillary Clinton and using a different server and not using government email. And so these people broke the law. And this particular person, we were discussing him in committee this week. We don't know if he's been punished. This is how terrible they are. They won't even tell us where he is. They won't tell us if he still works for the NIH. They won't tell if he's being punished. The rumor is he's on administrative leave, but that means paid leave. Right. So that means for a year they've just been paying him and he does nothing and he's not being punished. That sounds like a paid vacation. That doesn't sound like he's being punished for doing something wrong. But so a lot of information through Freedom of Information Act, some through hearings, some through combing through mounds and mounds of data. The revelation we came upon this week was by going through thousands of pages and knowing what to look for and really finding only the tip of it, because we found a meeting that had occurred and we found an email chain that indicated that a big chunk of our federal government actually knew that they were trying to create a virus like this and that there was a grant proposal from Wuhan Institute of Virology with UNC and Ralph Barrick and with Peter Daszak at EcoHealth. And we discovered this week that it wasn't just a few people in government. 15 different agencies were represented. We also discovered that the original proposal actually includes some of the work being done at the Rocky Mountain Lab in Colorado, which is owned and run by Anthony Fauci's NIAID, a subset of NIH. And so it's like, Anthony Fauci continues to say he knew nothing about this project, but part of the research to create this kind of virus was going to be done in Colorado, and they knew about it, and yet not one of them said anything. When COVID comes out in January of 2020, we see the sequence, and we say, oh my goodness, it has a furin cleavage site that makes it more infectious to humans. We've never seen this in nature. Alarm bells should have been going off in all the people who had heard the presentation in 2018 saying, oh my goodness, this is what they proposed to do in 2018, and we knew about it. Instead, they covered all of that up, they hid it, and then they tried to say it came from nature and there was no laboratory involvement. It's dishonest at its very core.
Well, you alluded to some announcements that were recently made, really bombshell announcements. Apparently 15 different federal agencies knew about the DFUSE project, a project that basically proposed to create the virus that would have been shockingly like the COVID-19. Tell me more about that.
So DFUSE, it's the capital letters DEFUSE, DFUSE, was a project that we only learned about from a whistleblower. So there's a brave Lieutenant Colonel Marine at DARPA who is involved in this area. And he got suspicious that some of this research may have already been ongoing with Wuhan. So he went to a folder, I presume a computer folder, to look for it. And he looks in the folder and it's empty and there's nothing there. And it looks like the place where things would be deposited in that folder, and it's empty. He sees an exchange that I have with Fauci in committee. He sees the tension going back and forth, and he goes back to look in the folder again, and the documents are in there. And the documents are the Diffuse Grant. And the Diffuse Grant was never funded by our government, but it was a proposal in 2018 to take a coronavirus and then to insert a special cleavage site in to make it more infectious among humans. See, coronaviruses are very infectious among bats. Bats sort of live with them. It's sort of endemic to bats. But they aren't very infectious to humans unless we manipulate them. If we manipulate them, and that's why we think COVID was manipulated, because it was extraordinarily infectious from the very beginning. But they wanted money to do this. DARPA turns them down. But what we discovered this week is it's not just DARPA that's been covering this up. It turns out 15 agencies were briefed on it. And it turns out NIH and Anthony Fauci's NIAID were involved with this project from the beginning. And so this means that dozens of people knew about this, and not one of them came forward to warn us that, hey, the Chinese have been trying to create a virus like this for some time. Maybe we should question them. Maybe we should question that this came from a lab. Instead, the opposite. Everything that came forward in the spring of 2020 on was Anthony Fauci covering this up. And I think because he knew if the pandemic could be linked to his funding, he would forever be blamed for this pandemic. And I think he rightfully should be.
Well, as a ranking member of the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee, what are the next steps with all this?
Well, we've finally gotten the Democrat chair to sign some letters of request for records. And that sounds like baby steps, but it's taken us a year or two to get that. We got that. And it's been almost a year since the Democrat chairman started signing some letters. One of the letters is, we want to know from NIH, when you looked at the research from Wuhan, because they did fund some research, they admit to it. When you looked at it, how did you determine that it was safe? What was the discussion between the scientists? If it wasn't gain of function, see, Anthony Fauci still says, oh, we weren't doing gain of function there, which is a complete lie. But if it is true, present the evidence that was presented to the scientists and let us know how you concluded it wasn't gain of function. Now, it's the wrong decision, and it was gain of function because it became a pandemic. So they obviously made a mistake. But we are still having trouble getting that information. But we do have our committee now with Democrat support trying to help us get records. The Biden administration is still resisting. I'm also working on a bill that would have oversight for dangerous viruses be under a new presidential committee that doesn't deal with funding. The problem with Anthony Fauci overseeing it is that anytime someone would oppose him, he would fire them. So there was a committee of scientists who thought we needed more rules on gain of function back in 2012. He fired them all. He just suspended their terms on this board and then repopulated the board with his friends who all agreed with him. And you have to realize this is a philosophical, scientific debate. Anthony Fauci's in one camp, and he said in 2012 that, yes, a pandemic could occur if a scientist were infected, bitten, or transferred, or somehow a pandemic should occur, but the knowledge is worth the risk. But then there are other scientists like Kevin Esfeldt from MIT, who works in CRISPR technologies, brilliant scientist. He's not anti-science, he's pro-science. He says that creating these viruses that don't exist in nature, he says that it's a risk or a gamble that civilization should not take. So you have on one hand some scientists saying we shouldn't do this research. On the other, you have Anthony Fauci saying, do whatever the hell, it's worth it. You know, the knowledge is worth it. Ah, well, a few million people died. Well, you know, but it was a lot. We learned a lot of things about it, you know. And I think that's a careless and recklessness, which sort of should preclude him from ever being in charge of so much money.
Yeah, and I appreciate you writing this book, because I've told people and I've written a review on it. And if you haven't read this book, please read the book. Because it really tells the other side of the story that really didn't get publicized when COVID was at its height. And you really shine a light on a lot of interesting information that really the American people need to know about.
Well, we're gradually winning the battle, I think. The odds were against us from the beginning. All of big tech suppressed us. They all said we were crazy. All these scientists who were actually collecting money and had a conflict of interest were saying we were crazy. But the interesting thing is now The FBI has concluded that the virus came from a lab. The Department of Energy, which has more scientists than any other department in our government, has concluded that the virus came from the lab. So two major agencies in our government have come to the same conclusion. So we're not so much marginalized. Even the CIA, which is sort of the best example of corruption and deceit, their job is to lie, basically. But they're supposed to lie to foreigners. They're not supposed to lie to Americans. But anyway, the CIA, when they voted on this, there was a scientist. We know this only from a whistleblower. They had six scientists or seven scientists. And we are told by the whistleblower they voted 6-1 to say that it came from the lab. And then they were overruled by superiors. And they had an internal dispute at the CIA that was adjudicated, and the superiors won. But they basically changed the conclusion from that it came from the lab to that it came from nature. And we think that was done for political reasons. In fact, some people looked at this, and there are people at the CIA that hated Trump so much that because Trump was saying things about it coming from Wuhan, they thought, oh, that's anti-China, that's not right, and that's xenophobic. We will suppress any information of the lab leak, and we will go with nature because that's more friendly, and that's being nicer to China, and that's also not supporting Donald Trump. And it's too bad because we pay for them with our taxes, but they're using the extraordinary powers to spy on foreigners, spy on us, to do all of this, to manipulate the news and manipulate it. But they're using it basically out of hatred for Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, Senator Paul, thank you for being on the DeCesare Group podcast. And go check out the book at randpaulbook.com.
Thanks a lot, Jim.
Thanks so much to Senator Rand Paul for coming on the DeCesare Group podcast, and thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the DeCesare Group podcast on your preferred platform, leave us a review, and share your feedback with us. You can also follow the DeCesare Group across all social media platforms, Facebook, X, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And be sure to visit our website, thedecesaregroup.com, and subscribe to our newsletter, Soki Economic Development and Business News. The DeCesare Group podcast is produced by the DeCesare Group, a public relations and consulting firm in South Central Kentucky. Our engineer is Justin L. DeCesare. The L stands for Liberty, with content contributions from Brooke Mattingly and Amy DeCesare. I'm Jim DeCesare, and join us again next time for the DeCesare Group podcast.